This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee because they go over every vehicle individually. Great service department, whether it's quick lane or inspections, routine, difficult, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And we bring in one of the absolute best in the business, Tim Kirchen. Tim, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
So I want to start with the Tampa Bay situation. Now, we know they're going to go play over at Steinbrenner Field, which is next to the Bucs Stadium. But long-term, what snag have they run into with the possibility of a new park that was supposed to be there in 28? What's the new snag now?
Well, it's the same as the other snags. The people in St. Petersburg want to keep them in St. Petersburg. But there are so many snags involved here that this is really, really tricky. You know, Bud Selig told me 15 years ago as the commissioner of baseball, we have to fix what's going on in Oakland and Tampa Bay. 15 years ago, yeah. And we still haven't fixed it. So there are all sorts of issues out there, all of them financial, and that's why it's just not as simple as it was, all right, we're going to have a new stadium ready in 2028. Well, it doesn't appear that's going to happen now. So there are many snags, but they're similar snags. It's money, it's bond issues, it's all that. It's a very complicated situation.
Now, are the A's pretty much settled on Las Vegas now, or is there anything, any other hurdles to clear there between now and when they're supposed to go?
Well, I think they'll end up in Las Vegas, yes. But I say think because I'm not 1,000% sure about this. It sure looks like it's going to happen, and they're going to play in Sacramento until then. But until you see a shovel in the ground, you're never quite sure about these things. I mean, moving a franchise is very, very difficult and complicated to do. But I think it's going to happen. I think the A's are going to end up in Las Vegas, but not still 1,000% sure.
Because of these two situations, what kind of clamp does that put on the possibility of expansion? And I ask for two reasons, because they've talked about the A's and Rays. They want that settled first before they expand, because then the possibility is, say, one of the moves, they could take one of the cities that was thought to be an expandable city.
Yeah, exactly. I think there will be no expansion until they're absolutely positive what's going to happen to the Rays and what's going to happen to the A's. For the exact reason you said, Steve, if something does fall apart somehow, some way, and then suddenly an expansion market gets a team very quickly and doesn't have to wait for the next expansion, then that's what needs to happen here. So we still have to wait, and it's a very tricky, tricky situation.
Half the fans here where I live are thrilled beyond words about what the Phillies have done in recent years. They're just frustrated they haven't been able to go over the top. The other half of the fans are thrilled because they got Paul Skeens. He ended up being the National League Rookie of the Year. When you look back at his season, considering that he entered the majors 10 months after being drafted, what was your thought on what you saw from him?
Well, I think he should have won the Rookie of the Year, even though Jackson Merrill especially had a fabulous season. Mm-hmm. It's one of the greatest seasons a rookie pitcher has ever had. His 1.96 ERA was the lowest by a rookie pitcher who made at least 20 starts in the live ball era, 1920 on. That's how impressive Paul Skeens was. I think you can make a case that he was certainly the best pitcher in the National League from the minute he showed up. He's not going to win the Cy Young, nor should he, because Chris Sale is going to win the Triple Crown. But you could make a case that Paul Skenes was as good as any pitcher in the major leagues from the day he showed up until the day the season ended. And it was just overwhelming how good he was. He was so overpowering, and his combination of stuff and smarts and competitive nature, that was really impressive to watch all year.
Tim, some off seasons go through and there's some movement here or there. Then there are other seasons where the movement is all over the place and fast, furious, and occasionally dramatic. Any sense in talking to people that you talk with all the time as to what kind of off season this next month could be like?
Well, it's a pretty good free agent year when you look at what kind of free agent pitchers that we have out there. I mean, there are some difference makers in Corbin Burns and, you know, Max Fried and Snell and Sasaki. I mean, it's a pretty darn good group of starting pitchers. But I think the whole offseason is going to revolve, of course, around Juan Soto. Where right. is he going to go? And once that domino falls, everything follows that pretty quickly. But it just seems logical that he's going to get way over $500 million. I think he's getting over $600 million. And a lot of people I talk to think he's going to get $700 million. But until he gets that from whether the Yankees or the Mets or somebody else, of course, because there are all sorts of possibilities here, I think the whole market is going to be held up a little bit until we find out what's going to happen to Juan Soto.
And that would be Scott Boras, right? That's his agent?
Right, and Scott Boras is great at what he does, and he planned on this to get Soto to free agency so the maximum number of teams could bid, and I'm sure Scott Boras is thinking we need to break the record for the largest contract ever given to a baseball player, and that's going to be part of the process.
How interested are you going to be, not just by the number, right, but by the number of years that are in there? Not just the number, but the years.
Yeah, the years are going to be really interesting because we've already heard, you know, a 14-year deal, which just sounds absurd. But when we're talking about a guy who's this good, as you know, Steve, this is a generational hitter that we're looking at here. And given his track record, he's already got over 200 home runs. Given his special plate discipline that's better than any player in the game, and he just turned 26 years old, that makes 14 years not seem as ridiculous, but I wouldn't be surprised by anything in this negotiation. And maybe Scott Boras will say, all right, we're just going to go for a 3-year deal at, you know, or a 5-year deal at $60 million and then go through free agency again when he's 31 years old. So anything is possible here because everybody recognizes what Juan Soto did for the Yankees, how he made them a significantly better offensive team the day he showed up.
You've been around Dave Dombrowski a lot during the course of your lifetime, Tim. When you look at his ability as a GM, his aggressiveness as a GM, what kind of signals can that send to Philly fans because of the kind of GM he is?
Yeah, he's one of the great GMs ever. I think he'll be a Hall of Fame executive someday. And if I were a fan of his team, I would always think Dombrowski's going to figure this out. He's going to find a way to do this because that guy never rests until he gets the team that he wants. And he's also very, very quiet about things. You know, just when the Phillies look like they're not doing anything, or the Tigers or the Marlins or the Red Sox, pow, something big happens. That's how Dave Dombrowski works, and I fully expect the Phillies to do something, maybe something big this offseason, even though they don't need to. Their team is pretty darn good, but there's no way that Dave Dombrowski is just going to sit pat when the team did not accomplish what it tried to accomplish last year.
So how do you view the state of the game right now? This is a World Series that had terrific ratings, a lot of people watching, some dramatic moments. So where do you think baseball is right now, in your opinion?
Well, I always think it's in a good spot, Steve, because I'm hopelessly biased because I love the game so much.
Me too.
I like the pitch clock has changed the time of the game, made the games better, crisper. There are a lot. I like that attendance is going up a little bit. Ratings are going up. Again, Dodgers, Yankees had something to do with that. I love that I've never seen this kind of influx of, you know, big, strong, young, athletic players coming to the big leagues, starting with Trout and Harper, you know, 12, 13 years ago. It's amazing the talent that we see. But, we still have a lot of work to do to make this a better game. We still have too many walks, too many strikeouts, too many home runs. We still don't value the hit like we should. We still don't value the starting pitcher like we should. But they're working on it. They're trying to get the game to be a better game. And I have patience enough to say, all right, these things are going to turn. But one of the first things we have to do is return the value to our starting pitchers. And instead of starting an opener or a bullpen game in the World Series, we need to find a better way to get our starting pitchers to have more of an impact on the average game.
The last part, I could agree with all of it, but the last part, I talked about that a lot. Like, you have to have a bullpen game in the postseason? Really?
Dodgers had three of them, two in the League Championship Series and one in the World Series, and they won the World Series, which doesn't help the fact that we're trying to get more value to the starting pitcher when the Dodgers, with all their injuries, still found a way to win it by using bullpen games. I just don't think that is a healthy situation for baseball.
Tim, you can vote for as many as 10 guys in the Hall of Fame ballot, if I'm correct about that. When you
that
look at
correct.
This, okay. When you look at this Hall of Fame ballot, what's your read on what you would like to do with it?
Well, I really haven't studied it yet, but believe me, when I sit down to do this, it is a big process for me. I think it's a pretty darn good ballot. I think Ichiro is going to go in on the first ballot, obviously as he should. I think C.C. Sabathia has a chance to go in on the first ballot. I think Billy Wagner is going to go in because it's his last year on the ballot, and he came so close last year. I think we have some other really interesting first-timers, including Felix Hernandez and Dustin Pedroia. So I find it to be a really interesting ballot, and I think they all are. But it's really hard to vote for the Hall of Fame these days. No sympathy required. It's the greatest privilege I have. But it's still a very difficult process when you have to factor in still, performance-enhancing drugs and all that stuff. It makes a very difficult assignment, but one that I love to do because of its degree of difficulty.
Yeah, 75%. Extremely difficult. So when you are evaluating, you saw the players play on this ballot. What role does what you saw play into it? And do you then fall back at all on any stats along the way, either to back it up or just to make sure what you saw?
Yeah, I think it's really important to have seen the players play, from a different era. Jack Morris is now a Hall of Famer, and the numbers may not stack up as him being a Hall of Famer, but if you watched him pitch, especially on opening day 14 times, if you watched him pitch in the postseason, like Game 7 of the 91 World Series, you can believe what you saw that guy is a Hall of Famer. So I think it really helps that I saw all of these guys play. But I also depend greatly on the statistics. And it's not my favorite, but it's one that I use often, is OPS. To me, it's the best barometer of a player. How many times you're getting on base? How much damage are you doing? And OPS is a very important category for me, but I factor in so many things, and I always make calls this time of year just to people who played with and against guys and said, just tell me, am I seeing this the right way? Is this guy a Hall of Famer, or is he not a Hall of Famer? I still depend on that. I still think you have to do your research and do your reporting before you make your final decision.
You mentioned OPS. Is there a stat for a pitcher that you look at that to you is a swing stat?
Yeah, I mean, we have so many stats today, but I still value earned run average more than anything else.
Me too.
And even though I understand that wins can be a very misleading category, I'm well aware of that and have been for years and years and years. If you have a lot of wins and you have a low ERA and you have a lot of strikeouts, as Tarek Skubal and, you know, Chris Sale, both of whom won the Triple Crown of pitching this year, those are three categories that I'm always going to pay attention to. But if I have to pick one, I'm going to pick ERA because I think that is the best symbol of a pitcher's effectiveness.
I do have to ask you about Billy Wagner because he did get so close. What is influential about Billy Wagner in his career when you've really gone in depth as to what he did and did not do?
Yeah, he is basically the hardest pitcher to hit as far as hits per innings pitched. Go look at his hits per innings pitched and go look at his strikeout rate, and you put those two together and then you add in all the saves, and that's where I believe Billy Wagner is a Hall of Famer. You know, he did have some blown saves. His postseason record is not particularly good. And, you know, he didn't pitch 1,000 innings. And there are enough purists out there who feel like if you didn't pitch 1,000 innings, you can't be in the Hall of Fame. That's not true. We have guys with less than 1,000 in. But that works against Billy Wagner. But my guess is this year, last year eligible, he will get in.
When you pitch that many years, you're going to have a couple of blown saves, okay?
Of course.
You know, that's what I always love. You know, he had a couple of blown saves. Well, no kidding. Right. Nobody's perfect out there. My last one's going to be about Ichiro. When watching him play, what did you appreciate about him, his style of play, and how he went about his job that made him an exceptional player in your mind?
Well, he was as good at getting a hit as anyone we've seen probably since Tony Gwynn. And I still value a guy who can go up there, find an opening, and get a hit, because we don't value that anymore. His ability to hit virtually any pitch, you know, I remember his rookie year, he hit a bouncing ball, a ball that bounced before it got to home plate, and he hit it on one bounce and hit a line drive single to center field. And I called Pat Gillick, his general manager, the next day and said, "Pat, what was that all about?" And he said, "Well, he used to practice that all the time when he was in Japan. He used to practice hitting a bouncing ball just in case it came up during a game, and in that game, it did." So you take that, all the hits he got, on top of the speed, all the stolen bases, and was one of the greatest defensive right fielders with one of the greatest throwing arms I've ever seen. To me, that's the full package of Ichiro.
That I was about to bring up the last part. People don't often talk about what a great defensive player he was. He had the right angles, the arm, utilized his speed the right way. I loved how he played defense.
Yeah, and Bobby Valentine once told me that Ichiro is a mathematical genius. And he said the reason he was such a great outfielder beyond his athleticism is he could see the angles of the ball and the field better than others could. So when he sees a ball go up in the air, he could tell from his mathematical background where to run to intercept that ball and catch it. But that's what Bobby Valentine told me. I never forgot that. That was very interesting to me. But Ichiro is a great defensive player. And when you're that good on both sides of the ball, you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, obviously.
Well, you're a Hall of Famer, and I appreciate the time you gave us today, Tim. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
Tim Kirchen, and yes, he is a Hall of Famer. Right? I love the story he told when he was making the ride over on the bus to Cooperstown. And I love this story. He's sitting next to Sandy Koufax. Sandy Koufax. Now, everybody, of course, Sandy Koufax, fastball, curveball, no hitters, perfect game, World Series. And Tim sits next to him, and he talks to him about Sandy Koufax when he played for the University of Cincinnati basketball team. because he knew his background. Right? Playing for the University of Cincinnati basketball team. And that was the conversation on the way over. Right? And Sandy Koufax, you could, based on how Tim tells the story, you could tell appreciated so much that like Tim knew so much more about him than just being a pitcher. It's great. Great, great story. Loved it. This half hour being brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, great service department, quick lane, inspections, routine, difficult, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The holidays are filled with traditions. Why not start a new one this year? By getting up to an additional $1,000 off a new Kia. It's the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Kia for exceptional holiday deals on all the popular Kias. And get up to $1,000 additional off on select models. 2024 Kia Sorentos have 0% financing for 48 months and start as low as $28,495. 2025 Sorentos have 1.9% for 60 months. And there's 16 to choose from. 2025 Kia Sportages have 1.9% financing for 60 months and start under 30 grand with 24 on the lot. And there's 21 2024 and 2025 all-wheel drive Kia Tellurides starting at just $39,995. Celebrate the holidays during the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf. For details, see dealer or go to Kia.com.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar, led by my two personal favorites, the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. Yes, heading into Thanksgiving and the holidays. Stock up now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Very pleased to be joined by the outstanding Missy Matthews from the Steelers Network. Missy, welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show.
Hey, thank you so much. It's, Thursday night football, busy week, but excited about tomorrow.
Yeah, no question. The game with Baltimore, you know, you're down there on the field. What's it like for you in the field to see that kind of rivalry play out with that kind of hitting the way it plays out?
I love it. I really, really love Steelers and Ravens. It doesn't matter, even if both teams didn't have the records that they did. It is always just entertaining, physical, as you said, the chippiness. If somebody got thrown out on Sunday, I don't think anybody would have, you know, blinked or been surprised. But I think it's also just, it's the respect, love, hate relationship that the two organizations have with each other. You know, Coach Tomlin and John Harbaugh, exchange pleasantries on the field before the game, and then they just go into the zone. And Mike Tomlin was extra jacked on Sunday, something that I've never seen him do before. When the player intros are happening, he's normally on the sideline around the 50. He walked almost in front of probably where a lot of the camera and video guys were not happy, to kind of take in his players running out. He had the defense introduced, and you could just tell that they were ready to go. But I will say, even on that first drive, when they got the ball out of Derrick Henry and were able to recover it, when they came to the sideline, it wasn't this big celebration. It was like, all right, let's lock in. We got more work to do. It's early. So there wasn't that wave of high and low emotions.
In my sports broadcasting class here at Penn State on Monday, you know, you try to remind them of certain things. And I said, look, I want to remind everybody, there are multiple ways in which you can win a game. I said yesterday, Sunday, was one of them. And, of course, it's the second time this season they've done it with six field goals. How important is it for especially young broadcasters to understand it's about winning and there's just multiple ways to do it?
I mean, it is, very interesting, the fact that they've done it twice now. In the first week, you think, okay, it's week one of the regular season. Kirk Cousins just coming back. Everyone's kind of getting their groove. Justin Fields is the starter. Russ Wilson isn't playing, but it's just how the game unfolded. But imagine if Justin Tucker made one of those field goals that he missed, or if Chris Boswell wasn't 6-for-6. It's just crazy because we always call the scoregami when it's Steelers-Ravens, because sometimes you can figure out multiple crazy ways with, like, adding a safety that you can get to their scores, because they're always so obscure and it's never a shootout usually.
All right, so you've had a chance now to watch Russell Wilson up close on the field. That's how he plays. And this is not going to be, I'm not looking for a Justin Fields versus Russell Wilson thing. That's not what I'm looking for here. What are you seeing in how Wilson, the veteran, handles this offense that's made a difference in how this offense plays?
I think, honestly, Steve, you'd have to go all the way back to when he signed in free agency. He had guys, flew him out to California, his house in San Diego, before OTAs even started. He just has that, like, he knows how to lead. He's been there before. He knows how to bring guys together. He knows the extra work that has to go into it. Every Tuesday is a player's day off. Russell Wilson is always in the building. Always in the building at the same time. Then he goes to Children's Hospital and he visits and surprises, a bunch of the kids that are unfortunately there. He is very regimented. He knows what he's doing. And I think for a lot of the guys who probably, didn't love how last year ended and even the year before and just the ups and downs of the different quarterbacks, this was a chance to have somebody who's been there, done that guy. And even when Justin Fields was starting, Russell Wilson, I mean, if you could put him in his full uniform and give him, his helmet, like he would want to be looking at it, looking at his wristband. Even in the preseason, he was like that when he couldn't do stuff. And I just think that guys gravitate towards his leadership, the extra work that he puts in, and even the relationship that Russ and Justin Fields have fostered. This could go a number of ways, and I'm sure there's places where, if that was the situation of quarterbacks, they might not see eye to eye. They might, not want to help each other. And maybe it's the 10-year difference, but those two guys certainly have each other's backs and bounce ideas off of each other. And it's not this, screw him, I want to be the starter type mentality. They just, those two guys don't have that.
It's interesting to see, the people I work with. I work with Jack and people like that, every week. Tell the dog
to
sit.
Sorry, that's my dog barking at somebody.
Okay, first of all, what kind of dog is it?
Well, it's a golden retriever. His name is Duke. And, I'm still not over Ben Herb Street. Duke is 12, as we tell him, he has to live forever.
Missy, I had two Goldens, and they both got to 10. All right, so enjoy the. I love golden retrievers. Somebody was telling me that Russell Wilson, who, as you mentioned, goes out and visits. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was told he goes to the Steelers store and he buys the gear himself, and then he distributes
it.
Right. And I sat back and I thought, that tells me a lot about the guy. I mean, what does that tell you?
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, and he's not doing it for the clout either.
Exactly.
I totally understand. The Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh is one of the most amazing children's hospitals in the country. I understand why when he's there, they're posting photos. But Russ isn't going there for the photos. He's engaged with them. And even the Pittsburgh Penguins were there 1 week. They brought, a large number of their team and just happened to run into Russ in one of the rooms. And he just kind of said, hey, and was like excited to see them and that they were doing it too. But that's awesome, though, that, as you said, if he's going to buy it, and that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. What his ability to throw the deep ball and put touch on it, he puts a lot of air underneath it. What has just even the attempts that he's made to do it done to open up the offense, and what has it done to maybe even open up the running game, because he is taking shots?
I think it's huge. And the fact that you're seeing them work, of course, not everyone is going to be successful, but I think that you're seeing it, especially during those first two starts against the Jets and the Giants, knocking the rust off of Russ. And just the fact that now you're always going to have to know where George Pickens is, but they can utilize him in different ways. And I'm a huge fan of Arthur Smith, the Steelers' new offensive coordinator, and what he has done for them. But as you said, now you don't know what Jaylen Warren or Najee Harris is going to do when they're in, because sometimes they can catch a ball in the flat, or sometimes they can run the ball well, and you have to account for where everybody's at. And I think Mike Williams is a perfect example. Was traded about 3 o'clock on a Tuesday. About 3 o'clock the following Sunday, you know, he's catching a go-ahead touchdown from Russ. And I just think that that is something that they lacked with Justin Fields. He had other strong suits that Russ doesn't have, but I think the deep ball definitely helps, especially with the way they want to be physical and run the ball, like you said.
Yeah, I do like Van Jefferson. I thought that was a nice acquisition the offseason. Austin's fine. What do you think a guy like Mike Williams, in his own small way, can add that can help out, maybe offset a George Pickens?
I think it's another large body, and I am interested to see, especially with the, you know, the woes in the red zone going 0-4 against Baltimore. George, Mike Williams, Darnell Washington, who's, you know, kind of become a favorite, Pat Freiermuth, one of your guys, utilizing a lot of those big guys at the same time. You can't take away what Mike Williams could potentially do. You can't just, you know, say, oh, well, we got George, we don't care where Mike is. I think that hopefully that's something that we start to see creep more into the offenses. You know, Arthur Smith is more comfortable with him, and they're having more time to actually work together.
You brought up Pat, so I'm going to flip it to the other side. The guy that ended up making the play on Lamar Jackson at the end of the game was Joey Porter Jr. What have you seen, Missy, on the field, his growth as a defensive back in his second year in the league?
I think it's just cleaning up the little things, some of the technique things, some of the penalties. I know Washington was one of those games where people could say, you know, he could have cost it, of course. But I just think the confidence that he came in as a rookie, you're seeing it even more now in his second year and being comfortable with the defense. I also love that, you know, that was a huge play that he made. We cannot underestimate that. But the fact that, because there are so many loud members of the Steelers defense whose voices you usually hear, they said that Joey somehow is the quiet one. He's not like his dad in that manner. He kind of gave them a little pep talk when they called that timeout. And he knew exactly what to do. Coach Tomlin, Joey's position coach, Grady Brown, told him, stay in your lane, do your job. And that's exactly what he did. And that what a big time play by a second year guy, but just somebody who I think everybody is comfortable with in terms of what he can do. And I think even bringing in Dante Jackson, a veteran, obviously a lot more experience playing for a way different team, but just the pieces around him too are helping him grow. You can't discount having a Minka Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt, Cam Hayward. You could go through the list of guys, but huge play by him. He was excited, but then I saw after the game, CBS took a shot of his dad in the box, you know, celebrating. And I was like, well, I think, you know, PZ probably celebrated a little bit more than Joey, but good for him.
But see, but that's, you know, it, you know, like you, I've been around Joey a lot. It's just the way he is.
I mean, right.
You know, he doesn't have to have the same personality as his dad. He just has to be the first Joey Porter Jr. He doesn't have to be Joey Porter Sr.
Exactly.
TJ Watt is a special, special talent. What is his presence meaning maybe to the production of other guys on that defensive front just by his mere presence?
I think that's why you are seeing the Cam Haywards of the world, even Dean Lowry, a free agent, they added, being able to swat the ball down to get the sacks because teams have to account. We were kind of laughing when we were discussing the crew for the Ravens game, and the only good thing was that, you know, they usually let teams play, but they call offensive holding, and we all looked at each other when we were, you know, meeting with our radio team, and we're like, wait, does this mean TJ's going to get a call? You know, because he's held all the time. And you can't call it all the time, but it happens. But he fights through it. He knows how to turn on that switch. TJ is just, you know, I think Coach said, you know, visiting from another planet is probably the best way to put it, because the amount of work he does, he's also one of those guys, same schedule, same routine, takes care of his body, is very careful what he puts in it and in terms of what he eats, and just sometimes you're kind of at a loss for words when you describe what TJ is able to do. And I think it's great that Nick Herbig is back, but I really hope Alex Highsmith comes back soon, because I think with those three healthy, you add in Preston Smith, those are some edge guys you probably don't want to have to deal with down the road.
Right, and because of TJ, the guys on the other side are going to get a single. They're not going to get chipped by a running back or a tight end, because they've got to concentrate on TJ. He's the number one guy.
Right, and I know the sack numbers aren't there, but it's TJ doesn't have to record stats to impact a game, and we see that all the time. And I'm very territorial in the whole Myles Garrett, you know, saying he should apologize. I mean, TJ's class act. He took the high road. You know, he didn't go where I think Myles was trying to get him to go, and I respect that, and I just think he lets his play talk. That is just how he is wired, and he is intense. And they joked, you know, he sometimes gives pregame speeches in the locker room, and that he's broken a helmet before because he's, you know, firing them up. It's in his hand, and all of a sudden he throws it, and part of it cracks. So watch out for TJ pregame.
Yeah. I think most Steeler fans would probably feel like they've been going for years trying to somehow find another Ryan Shazier type of player. Patrick Queen is the guy that they were able to get from Baltimore. So now, Missy, you get a chance, instead of seeing him a couple times a year, you get to see him on an everyday basis. What has his impact been on the defense, especially in the last month?
I think it's huge. As you said, there have been a number of people that they've either drafted, signed in free agency to try to fit that role that Ryan Shazier played. And it's, you know, you go back and watch film of when he played, and you're just, you know, you almost have to remind yourself how good he was and how good he was young. We called it the summer of Shazier, the year that he was drafted. He was plucked right in with the ones, and that didn't always happen with the Steelers defense. But I think Patrick Queen is a you don't want to call him a veteran. You know, he's kind of there. It's not like he has the tenure of Cam Hayward. But the fact that he's the green dot, the fact that he plays every single snap, the fact that even in that game against the Ravens, when Coach Tomlin sends you out for the coin toss, that's something they never do. It's the four captains and that's it. But they sent PQ out there. You know, he deserved that to set the tone. He still did not let the emotions of going against the people that did not want you, have not spoken to you since, you know, that all went down in the off season. And I just think that what he brings, the consistency and obviously being able to communicate well, because last year we talked about this for a number of weeks of the defense not being on the same page. And their old defensive coordinator, Keith Butler, always said, as long as you're all running the same play, even if it's wrong, it's better than half and half.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the old Bill O'Brien thing at Penn State practices when he started here. He says, just run what you think it is. So one final question for you. What has been the reaction in Pittsburgh to what they have done to get to this point? And are people believing now what they're seeing? Because it seemed like for a long period of time there was some doubt, and now they just keep winning.
Yeah, I think being a Steelers fan growing up and obviously covering the team now, winning ugly is not something unusual. I do think sometimes that can give fans the avenue to nitpick or to say, well, you know, that just happened to go the right way. And I remember the 2020 season, the COVID year, which was just, you know, bizarre in itself, but going 11-0, you never just felt good about it. It was kind of like, maybe we are getting lucky bounces. For some reason this year, even from my standpoint, feels different. And I think that the players feel that as well. And I think they're they're getting to the place where they want to be on both sides of the ball. I think offense clearly has a lot more work. But at the right time, you want to play your best football at the end of November into December and making the playoff push. And I think fans feel that as well, and it's not just this, like, overly optimistic thing that's going on. I think you can feel it throughout.
Missy, you do marvelous work. The entire network, I had a great talk yesterday with Rob King. I was on his podcast yesterday. But you do marvelous work, and thanks so much for the time you gave us today. I really appreciate it.
You got it. No problem. Yeah, I was talking to Rob about you at lunch yesterday, so he said all nice things.
Oh, good. Oh, what a relief. He's the first one ever. All right. Missy, thank you. Appreciate you so much.
All right. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Missy Matthews. Doing great work on the Steelers Network. By the way, the four finalists for the Lombardi Award have been announced, and Abdul Carter of Penn State is one of the four finalists for it. It is obvious when you watch Carter what the pass rush part means. You see it in the tackles for losses. You see it in the number of sacks that he has or the number of quarterback hurries that he has. But Carter has become, in my opinion, such a terrific all-around defensive end. You look at how he ran down that screen last week, which was phenomenal how he did that. How he's playing against the run now. And remember, and this is something that I mentioned Rob King earlier. Rob asked me about draft guys, and Carter was the first guy that came up. And I said, look, I said, Carter went from playing a linebacker where you're picked up by a running back in all likelihood when you blitz, in all likelihood, right? I said, now he's going up against big, strong, length offensive tackles using his gifts of speed and his own power to get around them. But it's a different kind of game when you do that, and he's doing it. And T.J. Watt did that, making the transition, by the way, to the NFL. He played linebacker at Wisconsin. All right, now. Well, this half hour being brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
The holidays are filled with traditions. Why not start a new one this year?
By getting up to an additional $1,000 off a new Kia.
It's the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Kia for exceptional holiday deals on all the popular Kias. And get up to $1,000 additional off on select models. 2024 Kia Sorentos have 0% financing for 48 months and start as low as $28,495. 2025 Sorentos have 1.9% for 60 months.
And there's 16 to choose from.
2025 Kia Sportages have 1.9% financing for 60 months and start under 30 grand
with 24 on the lot.
And there's 21 2024 and 2025 all-wheel drive Kia Tellurides starting at just $39,995. Celebrate the holidays during the Kia Season of New Traditions sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
For details, see dealer or go to Kia.com.